This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, welcome to our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year. Still in the studio here with author Alex Michaelides, and it's our Q&A time just before he zooms off for the launch of The Fury, which is happening today.
Yes, Piccadilly.
Down in Piccadilly. Is it Waterston's, is it?
That's right, yeah.
And then you're back to America for more entertainment for yourself, talking to lots of happy Americans and flogging the book.
That's put beautifully.
Yes, yeah. Flog the book.
What is, Alex, what is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
I have just finished the new David Baldacci book, which is coming out in a month or so, and it's called Calamity of Souls. I loved it. I get sent an awful lot of books to read. Most of them are terrible. So it was a joy to read this fantastic courtroom drama inspired by his youth in Virginia. It was just the richness of detail, and the writing was just exquisite. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah, I think he's given you a quote on the back of the book. But he's one of those American writers who just seems to have the knack for getting it right every time.
Yeah.
You know, even if you think, I know the kind of thing that he writes, you might do, but there's still something that's new.
This feels very different to a lot of his stuff, actually.
Does it feel like a David Baldacci book?
It does, but I emailed him afterwards and I asked him lots of questions because I was very curious how long it took him to write. And he said that he'd been carrying this story around for 20 years inside him. And so there is a lot of himself in it. And wow. I think that comes across.
Okay, wow. So that's called The Calamity of Souls, or The Calamity of Souls?
I think just Calamity of Souls.
Calamity of Souls, David Baldacci, okay.
Is there an idea for a book that you've read that you wish you'd come up with yourself? And that can mean plot, that can mean character, twist, whatever. Is there something that you'd wish you'd come up with yourself?
Most of Agatha Christie's work, yeah. There have been occasions when I have started to write things and they have been very similar. I don't want to say, because there's one idea that I might try and reuse now, but I did write a full draft of it before I wrote The Silent Patient, and then walked into a bookshop and saw this book had come out with an identical plot.
Wow.
And I did go home and cry.
You'd written the entire draft?
Yeah. Oh my and it was God. Such a high concept idea that I spoke to my agent and he said, just don't bother. It's no one's going to...
Is this the same agent that doesn't like the ellipsis?
No, this is an agent who then dropped me before I found
him or her.
The second agent, yes.
That first agent must feel like a right Charlie.
Dear.
I don't know about that, but...
Where do you do most of your reading?
I like to think I would do it at home on the couch. Yeah, I'm finding it harder. I listen to audiobooks now a great deal, which I never used to, mainly because my eyes are going as I'm getting older and I sit at the laptop all day and I just find it's hard to focus on the page sometimes. And so if I listen to an audiobook, I can cook at the same time and eat at the same time.
What would be a favourite audiobook? Give us something that maybe has lived as an audiobook particularly.
Well, I think the first one I listened to, my sister listens to an awful lot of them and I resisted them for years. And then she said, just listen to Jeremy Irons reading Brideshead Revisited and you will be converted. And I did and I was. And it's just incredible performance. So, yeah.
Something that's held me back on audiobooks, because I listened to a couple, is that I find myself suddenly drifting away. And then 5 minutes, I realise, oh my goodness, I've no idea what's happened for the last 5 minutes because I've been thinking about my shopping.
Yeah, it happens. But you know what? I had that problem too. And then you do, your attention span gets better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does.
So persist with it.
Sorry, and does this mean you're particularly on it in terms of who does the audiobook for yours?
Absolutely, and that's a really great question, Simon. Glad you asked that. When I was writing the novel, I kept thinking of Alex Jennings, the English actor, because I'm a big fan, and also because I was trying to write a narrator who's got a kind of a wry sense of humour, and there's a rhythm and there's jokes. I just kept hearing Alex's voice, and I thought, oh, he'd be amazing because he'd land all of these jokes. And we asked him to read it, and he said yes. And I couldn't bear to listen to the first two audiobooks of my novels because I just kept finding things wrong in my writing and the performances and stuff. But this time, when the files arrived, I had a bottle of wine, lay on the couch, listened to the book, and laughed my head off.
Excellent. Brilliant. Fantastic. Brilliant. What a great experience.
Have you ever tried to impress someone with a book?
Explain, because Matt, so you've done this.
In my youth, and obviously misguided, and by the way, this never worked, I used to walk around with a dog-eared copy of a French book called Nest of Vipers by Francois Mauriac in the vain hope that I'd appear sophisticated to the ladies. So that was me trying to impress people with books. Have you ever tried that? Have you ever done anything as shallow as that, is what I'm asking, Alex.
I definitely have given books as gifts to people quite a lot, in the vain hope that they will fall in love with them in the way that I did, but it often hasn't worked. The one book I do always give people, and everyone I give it to thanks me, is Judgment in Stone by Ruth Rendell, which I think is the finest crime novel I've ever read. As I'm sure you know, it's just a masterpiece, and it inspired my first novel and countless other books as well.
See, this is where people curse our podcast because they get all these recommendations. Okay, I'll get that. Okay, I'll get that one as well. Oh, okay, I'll get it. So Judgment in Stone, Ruth Rendell. It's just worth making note.
The opening line is, Eunice Parchman killed the Coverdale family because she could not read or write. And that's the beginning, and you just can't put it down after that.
Do you concentrate on opening lines?
I do, from Ruth Rendell. Yeah, I really study Ruth Rendell and Barbara Vine, you know, her pen name. And she's brilliant at opening lines. Like, they're just incredible.
Here's a surprise question for you. We have a voice note from a fan. It's a voice note from fellow best-selling author Lucy Foley. Here we go.
Hi, Simon and Matt, and hello, Alex. As you know, I'm a big fan of your books, and I want to say huge congratulations for the brilliant The Fury. It's my favourite of yours yet. What I'd love to ask you is whether Elliot's voice came first, or the plot, or both together. His narration is so distinctive and made the book feel really unique to me, and I'd love to know a little about how he came into being.
Okay, that's Lucy Foley's question, which we knew about. We were trying to steer the conversation away from that in our first interview. But clearly this is something that we should have brought up in podcast number one with Alex Michaelides. But now is the time to address it.
Well, that's a real surprise. And what a sweet message. Oh, Lucy, thank you very, very much. The book keeps referring to a quote, which is character is destiny. That's something I think about a lot. It kind of essentially means who you are is what you do, and your fate is not imposed on you by the gods, but as a result of your character. Henry James said the same thing, and then Graham Greene said, character is plot, not necessarily character is destiny, but character is plot, and I think about that too. And so what I'm trying to say is that Elliot, as he told me the story, he created the plot. And the plot came from his character. So they are one and the same in my head. I think when I was younger and I was writing, I would try and insert characters into preformed plots, and then they never quite gel. I think they both have to be the same thing.
Okay.
So we're big champions on this podcast of libraries. So the question to you, Alex, is when was the last time you were in a library and what were you in there for?
I go into libraries fairly often. I think, you know, I'm doing events now in libraries. I like to work in libraries, I find it peaceful, and I can't work in cafes. It has to be, because I just get enraged by people's conversations.
Enraged by other people.
Yes, by other people constantly. Yeah. So libraries are like safe spaces. Yeah.
So you will do what, the bulk of your writing will be in libraries, or you would only write if you were in the library?
I would only write if I was in the library. I do write. I write mainly now at home, because even libraries can be difficult. I remember once when I was at the American Film Institute library, and I was just furious because this woman would not stop talking. And so I went loudly and complained to her, and she turned out to be the librarian.
Have you tried noise-cancelling headphones and things like that? Because in cafes, it can, because they're really good now at cancelling annoying other people's conversations.
Maybe I should try that. I do try earplugs, particularly on airplanes, but they don't fully work.
No. What you need is noise-cancelling headphones.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind.
And I think particularly the over-ear ones, like you're wearing at the moment, they can block out like 90% of annoying people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that final 10% you have to worry about.
Yeah, there's always 10%. You're always looking on the downside there. Yes, but 90, think of the 90% that you're missing.
Okay.
You know, that's very good. But you probably have to spend a bit of cash to get some good ones. But if you find people in cafes annoying, buy some good headphones. And
there's a distinction between headphones and earphones, because I spent quite a lot of money on what I thought were noise-cancelling earphones over Christmas, and they really don't. They really don't at all. Nowhere near as good as headphones.
Oh, I'll try that.
Headphones.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you. Well, no, I won't. Yes, I will. I'll tell you when we're done, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a book, Alex, is there a book or an author that always cheers you up? I mean, this assumes that you read books to be cheered up.
Yes, there is an author that cheers me up. Angela Carter, I love. Wise Children's probably the book that's given me the most joy in my life. And I sort of put off reading it too often, but I read it every couple of years.
Explain why it brings joy.
Because it's about joy. It's about it's an 80-year-old ex-chorus dancer telling you the story of her life. And it's kind of a theatrical life of born on the wrong side of the tracks in the UK and this touring company and then going to America. And it's just full of laughter and great characters and brilliant writing. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
How many books would you get through a month? We're sort of more interested in books that you're reading for yourself as opposed to books that you're reading for, you know, research or work or whatever.
I read really slowly, and I try to... I think it's a hang-up from having been an English student, is I feel a great deal of shame about all the things I have not read. And so I tend to read quite heavy-going literary stuff, which takes me ages.
Heavy going, meaning what? Joyce, what?
Like Henry James. Yeah, Joyce, I've tried and failed. That kind of thing. I'm getting into Dickens again at the moment and stuff like that. It's also about trying to improve as a writer. And I think I won't improve by reading present modern day thrillers. I need to read really great writers. So yeah.
That's interesting. So you wouldn't... So to become a better writer of contemporary fiction, you would read... classical fiction.
I would, because I'm trying to improve my prose as opposed to my plots.
So does that mean you would analyse, if you're reading, you just mentioned Dickens, if you're reading Dickens, you would stop and analyse a paragraph?
I would, or Evelyn Waugh. I'll look at, you know, the sentence structure and the choice of adjective and things like that, and just think about, try and learn. Often, you know, I think what I'm quite bad at is similes. So I try not to use them anymore. Because I think unless they're really good, they're terrible. And then so often when I'm reading someone like Evelyn Waugh, I'll look at his similes, which are always brilliant and expressive and interesting, and then steal them.
Quite right.
You are throwing a fantasy dinner party, and you can invite three authors, living or dead. Who's coming? Now, I think you'll agonise over this because you've already mentioned, I think, more authors and more books in the course of our conversation than any other writer that we've had. So, but that's the restriction. Alive or dead, three people.
I'd say Noel Coward, Billy Wilder. It's really tricky, the third one. Why not Agatha Christie?
Yeah.
A good combination.
And would they get on?
I think so. Billy Wilder and Agatha Christie, obviously, he adapted Witness to the Prosecution and made it better, much, much better than her play. He added character, you know, because her characters were quite thin, I thought. And then they had a correspondence for a long time. He kept writing to her, asking, saying, come on, give me another hit, do it again, give me another one that I can adapt. And she never did, unfortunately.
I can imagine at your dinner party there, Noel Coward getting a little bit hacked off with all of this because they're all getting on fine and he's being ignored and he wouldn't like to be ignored.
No, he wouldn't, but he and I could drink martinis together.
You could be cocktail balls together. Okay, that's a very interesting dinner party. Okay. And would they hang around a long time, do you think? Would it go on until the early hours or...?
I think Agatha Christie didn't drink. Apparently she had this really weird habit of just drinking full-fat cream.
Never heard of that.
So other people would have a glass of wine, she'd have a glass of cream, and then she'd have another glass of cream and stuff.
A glass of full-fat cream?
If you had a character in a book that only drank cream, you would instantly go, well, this person is mad.
And will be dead within 200 pages.
Because of too much dairy. I've never heard that before.
Death by dairy. You know, it's true. So I imagine she probably wouldn't last that long. You'd probably keel over after too much cream, wouldn't you, I think?
Wow. Yeah. Imagine that.
How can we have got to this far with one of the best known novelists in this country?
Of all time.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Only drink cream.
Cream for me, thanks. What?
That's the trouble with you, Agatha Christie. You're just a dairy bore. Well, well, well. OK, so, Alex, thank you very much indeed. The Fury is published by Michael Joseph. It's out now. It's another bestseller from Alex Michaelides. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email at any time, booksoftheyear@yahoo.com or via our socials. We'll be back next week. We'll be joined by best-selling American author Kylie Reid. Hope you can join us then.